Before the sermon starts, some of our children are going to be distributing a booklet. Today, you're going to get to read along or follow along the sermon because the sermon is in a book. What happened is this. About my fourth or fifth year of ministry, after Christmas, I found myself dreading the next Christmas. After 3 to 4 years of preaching through Christmas, I felt like I had used up most of my good material. I was not feeling terribly imaginative in terms of traditional sermons, and I was a little frustrated that if it was a theologically rich sermon, there were a number of people in the congregation who didn't necessarily resonate with that. And if I tried to appeal to, say, the children, I would look up children material, and this isn't entirely true, but most of the children Christmas material I came across, I would put in the category of cute. I don't do cute. At least, I don't do it well, okay? So I decided that I was going to try to write a sermon that would connect with both children and adults. And my wife, Sandy, and I, our kids were young. They were in the pre-reading stage. They couldn't read themselves, at least not very well yet. And we did a lot of reading to them. And the books we had fell into three categories. There were the books that they seemed to like okay, but Sandy and I dreaded having to read those books to them because we would fall asleep. I'm thinking of Richard Scarry here. And then there were those books that we liked, but the kids didn't seem to resonate all that much to it. And then there were the books that our kids loved, and Sandy and I loved to read them, and it was just great, and we'd read them over and over again. My daughter Lindsay, when she was 3, could recite the whole of Horton Hatch's The Egg. It should be like that, because Horton was faithful. He sat and he sat, and she was cute when she did it, but it's okay. She does cute pretty well. So what I decided to do was to try to write a sermon that would connect with both children and adults. I knew it was going to be a lot of work, so I started working on it at the beginning of June, worked on it for 6.5 months, developed a pretty serious obsessive compulsive disorder, which you will figure out what that is shortly. And but by mid-December, I had a sermon, and that's what I'm going to preach today. It was about the Magi. So go ahead, take your books. By the looks of a star, a sermon designed so readers may delve into the text, Matthew 2, 1 to 12. Part 1, wise guys. Far to the east in the land of Jerak, high on a mountain in a rickety shack, there once lived a curious wise man named Zach. Zach's forte was thinking. At least that was his notion. He thought about bluebirds and fish in the ocean, about things that go bump and seasickness motion. But most of all, Zach loved to study the stars and wonder if alien life lives on Mars. Zach wasn't the only wise man in that land. There were others, in fact. There was sort of a band or clan of mountaintop wise men who manned all the peaks in the country. Mountains, you see, were much in demand. They'd stay up all week, lonely as leeks. Then on Friday, they'd all climb down from their peaks to meet at a house rented out by the week. They'd enter, sit down, wait for someone to speak. One Friday, near the end of December, at least this is what they would later remember, Zach entered the house, sat down in his seat, cleared his throat twice, then rose to his feet. Friends, he began, I have something to say. I'll try to be brief, but please, if I may. Last night, as I stood gazing up at the sky looked peculiar. I asked myself, why? When off to the west, I noticed a star in a place I well know that no stars ever are. I sat down to ponder what this might portend. Perhaps war in the making, or earth at its end? But now my opinion, for what it is worth, is the star comes to tell of a king newly birthed. The wise men were baffled. Could this really be true? Was there really a star in the sky that was new? Quite frankly, they didn't quite trust what Zach said, knowing strange thoughts ran around in his head. In fact, they were starting to laugh at old Zach when up spoke two others. Their names? Mac and Jack. Look, wise guys, they said. Zach doesn't lie. Zach's not alone seeing that star in the sky. We saw it too, and we wondered why such a star appears now. What news does it bring? We too conclude it's the birth of a king. We furthermore think it important to state that if it's a king, it won't do to wait. We must follow and find him before it's too late. For the looks of our star say that this king is great. Those wise guys were sobered. Zach's news wasn't fake. So needing a plan, they took a short break at which they served Kool-Aid and upside-down cake. Then got down to business, which meant that they yammered, they argued, they shouted, they clamored and stammered, and hammered out quite a remarkable course. By tracing the star right back to its source, Zach, Mac, and Jack would go search for this king, each with a valuable present they'd bring. Wasting no time, they hopped home to their houses to look behind cobwebs and under dust mouses, searching for something, something to bring, something of value to give to a king. But all they could find for this great star-born prince was some moldy old gold, and a myrtle pie, minced, and a bottle of fragrance called Rinse of Incense. With clothes, food, and gifts, they packed up their load. They rented three camels at dusk hit the road, with no clear idea just where they would head. They'd follow the star, go where it led. Part two, The Wrong King. Almost 2 years later. One day the three came to a dusty old town. When their star disappeared, it didn't go down. Its light simply vanished off into thin air, leaving them puzzled as to just where the star had abandoned these weary wise men. And then they noticed the sign. It said, Jerusalem. The town wasn't large, though it did boast a castle, with guards who were rude and who gave them a hassle, demanding, who are you, and where are you from? What do you want here, and why do you come? Before grudgingly bringing them through the side door into a throne room and onto the floor, in front of a throne and a very stout king, who smiled. I'm Herod. Where's these gifts that you bring? There was something about Herod that made them uneasy. Too fleshy, too friendly, a little too sleazy. At the sight of the gifts, Herod's eyes opened wide. He got off his throne and came down by Zach's side. He fingered the presents of scent, mints, and gold, with such greed in his face that Zach almost told him to please keep your flirties from off of our gifts. Though Zach knew if he said that, the king would be miffed. King Herod, said Zach, with the respect that was due, I'm sorry, but none of these gifts are for you. Why are we here? Well, I'll tell you why. We've come because a star has appeared in the sky. This star is so brilliant, so startling, so wild. It simply must herald the birth of a child, a royal child, a king, a most wonderful prince. Hence the gold, the perfume, their myrtle pie, minced. Now Herod was sly, a cunning old geezer. who could trick the old toga off Julius Caesar. He knew that no prince had been born in his castle. Though he and his wife had had quite a passel of kids, they were now in their teens or much later. So this new king, he reckoned, must be a traitor. Herod smiled. Herod laughed. He slapped Zach on the back. He nodded and winked at Zach's friends, Mac and Jack. Fine fellows, I know of no new royal child. Perhaps my wise men have some news which they filed, which will help you to know where your king may be found, if, as you think, there's a new one around. The king called his wise men. They exchanged knowing looks. They surveyed their maps. They pored over their books. They chattered and chatted and batted around, some ideas mostly crazy, a few that were sound. Finally, they shuffled up close to the throne, bowed down 3 times, and said in loud tone, "Oh, magnificent Herod, oh, ruler of men, the child was not born here in Jerusalem, but just down the valley in Bethlehem." Herod smiled and smiled. Oh, could he smile? He could smile a mile and for such a long while. Again he clapped Zach in the small of his back and nodded and winked at both Mac and Jack. "Fine fellows," he said, "I'm glad that you came. I'm afraid, though, your star was a little off aim. Now why don't you stay here for just one more day? Then my soldiers, my servants, they may take a short trip to Bethlehem. Just look around. Then they'll let you know where your child may be found." Though feeling uneasy, Zach smiled back, then answered in chorus with friends Mac and Jack, "Why, thank you, O King. You're most very kind. But we'll go ourselves. We really don't mind. We must go ourselves for reasons of state. If there's a new king, it won't do to wait. We must go there and find him before it's too late. For the looks of our star say that this king is great." King Herod gave in. He managed to grin. As he shrugged both his shoulders and yielded, "You win. Go on your own, see what you find. Follow your star, and let me remind you, in Bethlehem you'll find the king whom you seek. When you find him, come tell me. I'd like a peek." Part 3, the star-crossed prince. Soon Zach and his friends were back out on the street, wincing while walking on tired, aching feet. At the limits of town, they were just a bit cheered when the star they thought vanished now reappeared to lead them away from this Jerusalem and down the long valley toward Bethlehem. They traveled all night, arrived just before day, entering the village just as the first ray of dawn hit the hills surrounding the town. Their star hung so low now, it nearly went down, touching each house as they passed on the street, when suddenly Zach felt his heart skip a beat. The star. The star. It was no longer there. Wildly, they scanned the sky to see where it had gone. It was gone. Where did it go? Then Mac pointed his finger and said, speaking low, "Looky there." They looked, and what did they see but their star hanging under the limb of a tree and grazing the ridge of a ramshackle roof, its failure to move giving eloquent proof they'd finally found the home of the child. Silently, solemnly, up to it they filed. The star marked a house in the poor part of town. The lawn was threadbare. The porch was run down with a cat on each step. Nearby, a dog lay under a swing on which children might play. A woodworker's shop stood a stone's throw away. What the star rested on was a carpenter's cottage, needing some paint, showing signs of dry rottage. Zach, Mac, and Jack exchanged looks of confusion. They trusted their eyes, but was this an illusion? Could a great king be living in such a poor place? Or had their star led them badly off base? As they climbed the front steps, the cats ran off squalling. As they knocked on the door, they heard a voice calling, "Who's there?" Then some footsteps. The door slowly creaked. Open a hair and two female eyes peeked. Out into the dawn seemed startled to see those bedraggled travelers numbering three. Zach mumbled, "Kind woman, we apologize. The three of us realized the sun did just rise. We normally don't go around pounding on doors at 6 a.m. Such things are for boors. But our star, you see, well, it was under your tree, touching your roof, and well, could it be that you have a child who might be a king or a prince or a lord or some royal thing?" Zach felt really foolish. His words sounded dumb. His clothes were all filthy. He looked like a bum. And talking about stars touching roofs under trees made it sound like he left his brain out to freeze in a 10 below zero Antarctica breeze. But the woman didn't laugh, didn't smirk, didn't snicker. In fact, in her eyes, there came just a flicker of joy at Zach's question. She didn't say no. She just nodded her head and pointed down low to the floor where a child sat holding a toy, a child quite small, a 2-year-old boy. Zach stared at the child as he stepped through the door and with much hesitation laid gifts on the floor. The tyke toddled over, examined each gift, plunged his hand in the moldy old gold, let it sift through his short, stubby fingers. Grain after grain, it fell to the floor in a splash of gold rain. Next came the bottle of rinse of incense, and even if he was a star-announced prince, he wrinkled his nose. The smell made him wince. Next came the mints. He grabbed out a fistful, stuck his hand in his mouth, and sat there quite wistfully, munching on mints while staring at Zach. Ignoring good manners, Zach stared right back. She motioned him in and to sit on the couch, a good couch, I guess, if you sit with a slouch. A smidgen of doubt still clung to Zach's mind. Was this really the child they'd traveled to find? This child in rags, this short little shaver? Was it surprising if Zach's mind should waver between trusting the star and believing his eyes, which saw a poor child munching mince pies? Zach desperately wanted to know at all costs. Was this child star blessed or simply star crossed? The cottage was warm. It had been a long trek. Zach's wise head grew heavy and bobbed on his neck. He fought not to sleep, a fight he would lose as he drifted off into a soft, dreamy snooze. In his sleep came a vision, at first a white light, then columns of angels shining and bright. One of them spoke, its voice crystal clear. "Zach, you are wondering just why you are here. In a hovel that's tattered and splattered and mean, and not in a palace with king or with queen. The reason you find yourself here in this state is the star called to you, and you didn't wait. You followed and found him. It's never too late. Now let me assure you, this king will be great." Not great isn't armies or castles with moats, nor great isn't chariots or soldiers or boats. That's the way Herod thinks, and those of his kind who hunger for power and so become blind, to the lives of the unknown, the poor and the weak, the orphaned, the lame, all whose futures look bleak. For those who are ailing, whose hearts are unsure, where sickness and sadness are ills to endure, and sin tends to cling, making hearts be impure, and hope solely hangs on a heaven-sent cure. Well, this is their kin, of the very best kind. More than just human, fully divine, God's presence in person in fullness of time, trueness of grace with a star as a sign. So don't you be worried. You did the right thing. You followed the star, you found the right king. Now listen quite closely, just one final note. Give Herod the slip, that glib, greedy goat. He'd kill the child, he's a wicked old beast. So go back to your mountains far off in the east. Leave right away, don't worry, don't wait. The child will be safe, just don't hesitate. Zach woke with a jerk that shook the whole shack. He kicked o'er the gold, what was left in the sack. The rinse went flying, scent filling the air, and if there were pie left, he'd have knocked it somewhere. Ignoring the mess he just made with his toes, Zach jumped to his feet and yelled, "Friends, we must go. Back to our homes. We found the great prince, delivered the gold, the perfume, and the mints. Let's hit the road. We must leave today. We must leave here this minute. We cannot delay." They sprang out the door like startled jackrabbits without saying goodbye. Not a very nice habit. They untied their camels and hopped in the saddle, their legs sticking out as each tried to straddle his camel and spur it away to the east. Each bounced like a fool on his two-humped beast. Woman and child stood on steps needing paint to watch as those wise men grew distant and faint. She chuckled, "Well, Jesus, weren't they rather quaint?" The child simply stood there, gave just a small nod, as if in agreement they'd been rather odd. Then they turned and went in, watched over by God. And then an epilogue. Back in the east, in the land of Gerak, there still lives a curious wise man named Zach. It's good to be back. He's fixed up his shack. Things have changed since his travels with friends Mac and Jack. Somehow his mountain just isn't the same. It's better, much better now since the star came, and since he's returned to some moderate fame. Now every Friday, Zach meets with his group and tells of his trip over clam chowder soup. And whenever Zach feels in a blue funky state, he waits till the night comes. He waits till it's late. And then when the stars are out shining first rate, he thinks of the star and the king who is great.